those that don't know me, my name is Josh Kicker. As I mentioned, I've been in the church a fair few number of years. I've been on staff for 22 years, serving alongside Pastor Steve and Sharon and Pastor Josh and Brooke, and it's been a great honor of my life. And anytime I have the opportunity to speak to you, it's a tremendous privilege and honor. And as we wrap up our series on wisdom today, has anybody enjoyed the series? Yeah. Anybody enjoy the lady last week that made fun of me being bald, you know, from, yeah. So, just took random strays during the panel. I don't understand it, but yeah, you know, I love talking about the subject of wisdom. We are the most informed generation in human history. But does that make us wise? We're the most informed generation out there. We can learn anything, especially with the evolution of AI. We can learn it within 30 seconds. Fortunately, I don't necessarily need AI. There's a young lady in my office that keeps me informed on all the trends. We were talking one day, and she's like, you know, oh, this book influencer that I listened to. I was like, a book influencer? Really? A book influencer? But she stripped it back and took it back. She's like, well, Josh, you do know what an influencer is, right? I'm like, how old do you think I am? Which she rebutted with, I'm pretty sure you're old enough to the same age as my dad. And so I'm now in that seat and kind of the old head on church staff and have staff members that could be the age of my children. But there are some things that frustrate me that AI hasn't necessarily figured out how to solve. One of life's great mysteries is how to fold a fitted sheet. Still befuddles me. No idea how to do it. Or you yank a hanger out of the closet and somehow it turns into some Chinese interlocking puzzle of three different hangers that you need some magic trick to undo. Or maybe, and hopefully you haven't experienced this in our building, but maybe you have, and this may be too much information, but sometimes when you're using the facilities and there's like an automatic flush sensor and your shadow moves, and it goes off too early, like some angry bidet that's, you know, telling you to get up and move on. And now you're paralyzed with fear, and you're like, I'm just trying to finish what I'm doing, and now I can't move because this thing's just going to go off. Like I said, probably a little too much information. Hope I didn't scare anybody from using our restroom facilities. But we have information saturation. But wisdom scarcity. We have a wisdom scarcity in our society, but we're loaded with information. Godly wisdom is not just some advice column on how to get ahead in life. Not just things we tick in the box on how to set ourselves up for success. James 3:13 says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. The humility that comes from wisdom. Proverbs 15:33, wisdom's instruction is to fear the Lord, and humility comes before honor. But I think sometimes in society today, we try to elevate honor. We try to elevate success. We try to elevate platform. But clearly, it's outlined something different. It comes in a whole different order. Humility comes before honor. And the verse before, humility comes from wisdom. So it flows wisdom, humility, honor. But we like to just jump straight to the honor part and say, look at me. Look at what I've done. Look at what I've built. Look at what I'm going to do. Look at the success that I'm chasing, the fame that I'm chasing, the fortune that I'm chasing. But we kind of get it backwards. Godly wisdom is simply taking a posture and learning to live life through God's point of view. To live life through God's point of view. It comes from the Lord. It's not something that comes from inside us. It's not something that comes from education. And I believe in education. I have two boys in college, maybe a third in a couple years, 50-50, you know. But I believe in education. But sometimes in society today, we get educated beyond our intellect. And wisdom is something that comes from God. Proverbs 2:6 says, it's the Lord that gives wisdom. So it's something that we receive. Because when we isolate it down to ourself, it's kind of when we drift away from God. And I wonder what causes a person, a people that have genuinely seen God move to drift. And I think Psalm 78 kind of answers that story for us. It's a story of Israel. It's a longer psalm. And there was this phrase, I came across it earlier in the year, and there was this phrase that just grabbed me and jumped out at me as to the meaning and purpose of what wisdom really was about. And even at the superscription, you know, the part that everybody skips over in the Psalms that kind of says Psalm 51, a Psalm of David, that little italicized portion in your Bibles that people don't really glance over. I don't even know if YouVersion puts it in there. But, and it said a maskil of Asaph. I was like, well, that means nothing. I don't know what that is. So Asaph's the person. So I looked up maskil. In the Hebrew origin behind it is this word that is deep and contemplative, almost this didactic poem, this that leads to wisdom. It comes from the Hebrew word sakal, which again leads to prudence, insight, understanding, wisdom. So right from the very start of this psalm, God's saying, read it a little differently. Read it a little differently because there's something to grab out of it. Psalm 78, 1 through 4. My people, hear my teaching. Listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth with a parable. I will utter hidden things, things from old things we have heard and known, things our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from their descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done. And then it goes on. This long narrative of everything that God had brought Israel through, and we don't have, for the sake of time, aren't going to read every single verse that's in there, but it goes through this long narrative, everything he brought them through. He parted the Red Sea. He brought water out of the rock. He brought manna from heaven, provision from heaven, all of the miracles that he's done. And then it gets to verse 32 and said, in spite of all this, they still sinned. Despite his wonders, they did not believe. And that phrase just sort of grabbed me, that in spite of all this, they sinned. And we're going to come back to that phrase a little later in the message, but St. Augustine wrote an exposition on the Psalms. And when he wrote about Psalm 78, he says, you kind of got to look at it with an inward sense. And what's an inward sense? Kind of the core of who you are, who you really are, your inner man, your spirit, your soul. Because this teaching is not just a history lesson, it's a wisdom song. Right from the jump, it was basically said, read this one a little different. Don't just read it and say, oh, look at all the great things that God has done in this historical narrative of everything that he brought him out of. But what are the lessons we can learn of? Because Israel's problem, our problem, is not the absence of evidence. It is not the absence of provision, the absence of miracles. Israel's problem, our problem, is a spiritual amnesia with a disconnected interpretation. You know, we chalk of being a opposite of wise is to be a fool or maybe ignorant. The opposite of wise isn't necessarily being ignorant, but the fool is someone who saw everything and learned nothing. And so when we look at this, firstly, Psalm 78 teaches us that wisdom remembers. And why is remembering important? So theologians kind of put God's attributes into two categories. There's communicable and incommunicable attributes of God. What does that mean? The incommunicable attributes of God are things that we can sort of define, but we cannot participate in. We can define them. His omnipotence, he's all powerful. His omniscience, he's all knowing. His sovereignty, his transcendence. Those are the incommunicable attributes of God. We can define them, we can see them, we can explain them, but we cannot necessarily ourselves be omnipotent. The communicable attributes of God are the things that we can share in. His love, his mercy, his justice, his wisdom. So when we posture and look at it, I agree. Wisdom isn't boiled down to who gets the most in life and gets ahead. Wisdom is boiled down to who stays closest to the source. So when we, because God, the problem is, like I said, we're kind of in this information saturation age and everybody's chasing information. God never called us to be omniscient. But he did invite us to be wise. It's like ricocheting. But he did call us to be wise. And so Augustine, when he wrote this exposition of the Psalms, and he said, read it with your inward sense, who you really are. He starts Psalm 78:1, my people hear my teaching. So how does that compare to the book of wisdom in Proverbs, our wisdom book? Proverbs 2:1, my son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you. Proverbs 3:1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart. Proverbs 4:1, listen, my son, to a father's instruction, pay attention and gain understanding. Proverbs 5:1, my son, pay attention to my wisdom, turn your ear to the words of insight. Proverbs 6:1, my son. Proverbs 7:1, my son, keep my words and store up my commands within you. Do you see the theme? Right off the bat, we were set up because we were hardwired for something more. Right off the bat, over and over, your posture as a son or a daughter of God calling out to you this relationship. That's why everything else you chase in life falls short and falls shallow. Because there's a depth to the richness and relationship that we have in God. And secondly, over and over after he said, my son, my daughter, accept, store my words, keep my words. Remember my words. Wisdom remembers. Forgetting God, not the things we walk through, but forgetting God is the cause of spiritual drift. Because life's going to throw curveballs at us, and we're going to walk through some stuff, and it's going to hurt, and there's going to be times where it doesn't make sense. But can I remember God in that? Matthew Henry, in his commentary, emphasized that Israel's downfall was a forgetfulness of God's works, not the absence of evidence. And maybe you walked in this morning and you say, I don't really see a lot of evidence in my life. The very fact you're here this morning is evidence that God still wants to speak to you. That God still has something in for. And maybe you forgot that business idea that he gave you years ago. Maybe you forgot the salvation that you had years ago. When I think about my inward sense, I still remember the day. I still remember the day, June 30th of 1995, my wife brought me to a revival service. Wasn't my wife then, that might have been illegal. Brought me in. We were 2 hours late. 27 years later, she's still 2 hours late to most things. But we were late, and I grew up in church, and as soon as I walked in, I knew. As soon as I walked in, my heart beat a lot faster, and it was timed right around the person's altar call, and I ignored it, lied to my parents about where I went. What an odd thing. My parents worked at a church, and I'm like, I didn't go to church. It's crazy. She dragged me down front when they had a ministry time after and they were praying for people, and he looked me in the eyes and he's kind of got those Steve Kelly blue eyes that kind of like, oh, you're like reading my soul right now. But I crumbled. And I ask you this morning, how's your inward sense? How's your inward sense? Take time this week and jot down the things that you may have forgotten that he's done in your life. And Augustine, how he kind of postured this was through this exposition on wisdom. He said the way to wisdom is virtue. How he defined virtue was something called order amoris, or the order of your loves. See, most of us aren't chasing necessarily bad things. Success, family, comfort, all of those things are good things. But loved in the wrong order, they can wreak havoc in our lives. And so a fool is simply sometimes someone who loves good things just in the wrong order. So not only does wisdom remember, secondly, wisdom reorders. Wisdom reorders. Jumping back into James, we already read verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder in every evil practice. I mean, James is pretty strong with his language there. And in verse 17, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure. First of all pure. Then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. It's first of all pure. He contrasts two wisdoms right off the bat, that godly wisdom is grounded in being pure and that worldly wisdom is rooted in selfish ambition and envy. Does that not sound like society today, that all of a sudden in my discovery of my truth that is somehow absent from the truth? And A.W. Tozer called it a contest as old as the world. And so they got a chart. They'll probably throw it up there. I'm not going to go through every single one by any means, but just contrasting godly wisdom and earthly wisdom. And I think, first of all, where it starts, pure versus selfish ambition and envy. What does that relate to? Because if you look at those, that top line, that's our relationship to God. That is our relationship upward. And then every attribute that follows after is about our relationship to others. So what does that mean? It means if I can sort this out, if I can sort out the vertical, then I can sort out everything else. Because it first of all starts in purity, my relationship with God. I don't necessarily, wisdom is my defense. My defense stands in Christ, Colossians 2:3, that says that you praise that you may understand the full mysteries of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So if I can sort this out, because if I don't have this sorted, when I do all of these other things, I'm just managing symptoms with no real healing. When I'm trying to go through life on my own accord, when I try to do it my way, when I try to do it, all of these things, it drifts into the other side, from godly wisdom into earthly wisdom. It drifts from submission, being teachable, to being unteachable. How teachable are you still in your world? Wisdom has a price, and its cost is submission. And I love all the different attributes of it, full of good fruit or empty. Sometimes we get too concerned about checking our theology when we really could just be checking our fruit that's in our life. And I love the last one, sincere versus hypocritical. The Greek word for sincere there literally means unhypocritical. And this whole section that James did in James chapter 3, where he makes this contrast between godly wisdom and earthly wisdom, is after a section called taming the tongue, basically how your mouth gets you into trouble. And isn't it true our mouth really reveals the order of our loves? And I love the fact that he concludes with sincerity versus hypocriticalness, because if I'm sincere, then it rules out my mouth's ability to spit the half-truths that keep me hidden and keep others from knowing who I really am. You heard it in the CG testimony this morning. She came into a place where she could be herself and let people in. And we live with a mask on, trying to hide and disguise who we are to others so they can't really see us, but claim we have no selfish ambition. Wisdom reorders. And I stole this from Stephen Covey, so by no means is it original. This is what we tend to do. These are the things we're chasing. Success, comfort, not necessarily bad things, career, all of these things are great. But then we try to fit in the other things. Remember, first of all, pure. First of all, pure. Oh, okay, let me get my relationship with God right. Let me chase down, you know, maybe I'll get involved in a CG. I don't know. I'm pretty busy. I got kids' sports all the time. I get that. And so then we try to fit in. Okay, let me get involved. And nothing fits. And we push things out because it no longer fits, because the things we're chasing that we've put a priority to, that we've put an importance on, no longer fit. But when we're first of all pure, then we say, okay, all right, you know what? I do need a community of believers around me that can lift my hands up when I'm going through some tough times, because life sometimes sucks. And so I need that help. And then we begin to look at different things. And then we get the right things in the right order, and we order our loves practically and correctly. everything fits in our life. Wisdom reorders. So what's out of order in your life? What's out of order in your life? Because firstly, if wisdom remembers and then it reorders, then the question becomes, what happens when life pulls at me the other way? Finally, wisdom takes hold. Wisdom remembers, wisdom reorders, and wisdom takes hold. That psalm was an active duty to teach, was a requirement to hold on. It went on after those first four verses that we read. In verse 5, he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children. Commanded it to be taught, that the next generation might know them. The children yet unborn will arise and tell them their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. Friend, forward vision dies when remembrance fades. Our ability to move forward begins to taper back when we forget the things that he's done for us. When we get further removed from the time he brought me out, from the time he paid that bill that I didn't know how it was going to be paid, by the time he shut that relationship door that I thought was probably a good thing, but maybe it wasn't, we forget the things he saved us from, and so our forward vision begins to fade. Life becomes task management. Wonder gets replaced with familiarity. How familiar we become with entering in and worshiping. Worshiping a God that saved us, that gave us everything, that sacrificed his son so that you and I could live in a relationship with him in eternity. The scariest part of Psalm 78 is that we can experience miracles, but not transformation. We can experience miracles, but not transformation of who we are. Because time and time again, he brought them out. Time and time again, he brought. And Psalm 78:32, in spite of all this, they kept sinning. Despite his wonders, they did not believe. In spite of what? In spite of opening the Red Sea. Yeah, I think it's funny too. In spite of this, in spite of his provision, in spite of raining manna on a daily basis from heaven, they got bored with the miracle. And our human cycle is that God provides, and then we kind of respond emotionally. And we get all in, and then we kind of get familiar. And then gratitude begins to fade. And then we, like Israel, sometimes demand what we once prayed for. We take a posture where we sometimes demand from God what we once prayed for, as though he owes us, and drift begins to set in. I'm not foolish because I've never seen God. I'm foolish because I saw God and stayed the same. The marriage that we once prayed for that we now resent. The kids we were believing God for that now seem like an inconvenience. The job that you love that you now complain about. Wisdom takes hold. And the challenge of Psalm 78 is that miracles are easier to experience than faithfulness. Because somehow we kind of absolve responsibility on the miracle side. We're like, oh, that's all up to God. But faithfulness is harder because it's more on us. And I've seen God, but I still don't trust him fully. I've seen God, and I still wrestle with anxiety. I've seen God, and I still wrestle with insecurity. I've seen God, and I still wrestle with doubt. All of those things are real. So what do I do? Proverbs says, take hold. Proverbs 4, 4 through 7. Then he taught me, and he said to me, take hold of my words. With all your heart, keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. It says take hold. Wisdom takes hold. So how do I take hold? Proverbs 3:3-4, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will find favor with God and man in a good name. Wisdom takes hold. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Write them on the tablet of your heart. He needs the other side. So y'all switch. Let it never leave you. But we kind of treat life like this. This is how we kind of take hold. And we just kind of hold on to things and whatever. And then when life comes hard, we just sort of let go. Because I found my truth. Because I found how I want to do it. And so wisdom takes hold. The world teaches you this is wisdom. This is foolishness. Sorry, dude. This is foolishness, but let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And so when God's done something for me, I begin to tie it around me so that I don't forget it. Hold that side. And when he brought me out and he paid the bill, it binds me again. And when I remember that, first of all, my relationship with God is pure, I can bind that around my neck. And so it's a little easier, or a little harder, excuse me, for me to drift. And so when he keeps bringing me out and does something for me, I begin to bind it around who I am, because I write it on the tablet of my heart and I don't let it leave me. I'm trying to get in a little better shape in my upper 40s. That's scary to say, just that I'm in my upper 40s. Nobody tells you when you do that, you're sore every day. There's no recovery day. You're just sore. These guys decided on Memorial Day, they wake up on a whim. They're like, hey, we're going to go run the Murph. I'm like, oh, you want to go? I was like, no. No, because I do one pull-up and my torn rotator cuff's going to come dismember my arm from my body. It's still going to be hanging there. They go out, run it like it's nothing, come home, couch max for the rest of the day, and then eat their Chipotle all day. And like, you want some Chipotle? No, I'm still recovering from the heartburn from 5 days ago when I had Chipotle. But let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Remember what God's done for me. And the world tells us this is foolishness. But this is wisdom. Because all of a sudden I begin to understand the rest of Proverbs 4 and 20 through 27, where it says, my son, attend to my words, incline your ear unto my sayings. Don't let them out of your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to all who find them. They are health to all their flesh. Verse 23, guard your heart, for out of it flow the issues of life. And says, keep perverse lips from your talk. Keep your gaze fixed straight ahead. Don't deviate to the left or right. It's a lot harder to deviate to the left or right when I've bound it around my neck. It fixes my gaze straight ahead. It fixes my focus on a God who loves me and a God who brought me out, who a God that I remember that time that he brought me out. It fixes me. It reorders the priority of my life and says, yeah, you know what? First of all, my relationship with God is what matters beyond anything else in my life. And then from that's going to come peace. And then from that's going to come consideration. And then from that's going to come good fruit. And then from that's going to come sincerity. And because I've decided to bound it around my neck. But too often we treat it like this. And so when life gets hard, we drop the rope. Remembrance is the rope. Thanks, fellas. Good luck getting out of that. Because in all of this, in spite of all this, they kept on sinning. My wife loves true crime documentaries. Pretty sure she could dispose of my body 3 or 4 ways without anyone finding. She can watch them, and we watch them, and like no emotion. And I'm like, this is actually somebody getting murdered. Nothing. But then something that comes along that matters of no consequence whatsoever. She watches the end of Avengers Endgame, and Iron Man dies. And sorry if I spoiled it for you, that movie's about 7 years old. And tears. begin to well up. But how often do we do that with God? We scroll through the highlight reel of everything he's done in our life with no emotion. And then the littlest thing comes along. Somebody cut you off in traffic. Your Amazon package didn't arrive in 2 days like they told you it would. And we get all bent out of shape. Because at the end of the day, there's another in spite of this in Psalm 78. Verse 32, in spite of all this, they kept sinning. Despite his wonders, they did not believe. And in verse 38, it says, yet, or in spite of all this, God still forgave them. God still loved them. God still brought them out. And for whatever you walked in here this morning with, in spite of all this, God still has a hope and a future for you. God still is still writing and scripting your story and ordering your steps. Because in spite of all this, he's still a God that provides. In spite of my humanity, he's still a God that loves me. What has God done in your life that you no longer actively remember? Where have you become kind of mundanely faithful, but maybe spiritually numb? Where has wonder been replaced with familiarity, and so you no longer expect to be transformed? Which, in spite of all this, will get the last word in your life? Which side of in spite of all this will you land on? Psalm 78 teaches us that drift does not begin because God disappeared. Drift began because we failed to remember. The wise is not the person that's seen the most. It's the person that's forgotten the least. Because in spite of all this, he still loves us. They loved in the right order. They never lost the wonder. The good news this morning is you're never too far gone. Never too far gone. Never too forgetful. Never outside of the reach of a God who loves you. No matter what you've walked in and carrying this morning, in spite of all this, God loves you. Augustine put it this way, our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. And that restlessness in your heart can only be satisfied through a relationship with Jesus Christ. And friend, maybe this morning you forgot, as Davey introduced that song this morning, you forgot what the presence of God felt like. Maybe your heart needs to be opened up and reminded of what he can do. Maybe you're still in a waiting period for God to bring you through. We're going to take just a few moments to worship again. And my prayer is that you feel the presence of God now, that you're in a spot and a presence that God whispers into your soul. But I still love the words of the song. You may not feel it, but you can still receive it. Amen.